This is January 11th, 2011. We are at the Amelia Island Museum of History, and the following interview is being conducted as part of the Amelia Island Museum of History's Heritage Keepers Project. We are interviewing Nick Demetrius Dionis. Nick was born April 25th, 1947, right here in Fernandina, Florida. My name is Marie Santry, and I will interview the subject on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. Assisting me with this interview is Robert Hamer. Welcome, Nick.
Well, thank you, Marie. It's a pleasure to be here.
I thought we'd start by, in general, talking about the Tiliakas and Dionis families that have a history here on Amelia Island with regard to the boat building enterprise. For the record, what were the names of your parents and your grandparents?
Well, my parents, my grandparents was Mike and Clara Tiliakas. And my parents were Anna and Demetrius, or Jimmy Dionis. Mike, you want me to tell about my grandfather?
Sure. Yes, please.
Mike came here in 1912, and as I was told, he was actually on his way to Tarpon Springs to build sponge boats. He came from Kalamos, Greece. And he visited Fernandina, and I really don't know why he visited Fernandina. There were some Greeks here. But he liked Fernandina. He liked everything about it, so he decided to stay. And then he met my grandmother, who was from Nassau County. She was a Franks, Clara Franks. And her mother was Lily Thomas. And that would be my great-grandmother. And her mother, my great-great-grandmother, was a lady by the name, last name of Bennett. And I don't recall her first name. So they got married, I think, around 1914. And they had three children, Nick, Anna, and Johnny. And my grandfather in the beginning was just making a living by repairing local boats and things like that and doing repair work. And then he started building boats. And the boats he was building were small boats for the time. They were boats back then were only about 25, 30 feet long. And so he started doing that. Then in 1941, he had quite an operation, and he also owned a few boats, too. So he was not only building boats, he was in the seafood business. Then in 1941, my father came over from Greece, from Santorini. And Dad went to work for my grandfather. And then about 1945, he struck out on his own and started, he opened his own boat yard and started building boats from, you know, there, which that is exactly where the container cranes are today for the port of Fernandina. My grandfather's boat yard was on the south end of Front Street, about where the end of the parking lot is for the city marina today. That's where his boat yard was. The shrimping industry was really growing, and there was a big demand, a big market for shrimp. And everybody was really trying to get bigger boats, more power, pull larger nets, multiple nets. And the old plans, the old models that they were using just didn't apply any longer. Well, my father, being a marine draftsman also, he drew new plans. And they're still using the basic design that he designed back then and still being used today. And they dubbed it the Super Trawler back in the 60s, early 60s. So, you know, with new plans, they were now able to put bigger engines on board, more horsepower, bigger wheels, props. They could pull multiple nets, they could pull larger nets, and thus the catch was more. And of course, these boats were going all over. A fleet would leave here and go to the Gulf Coast, all the way to Texas, and just shrimp wherever they were catching shrimp. That's where they would go.
Well, how big were the newer boats compared to the old?
The newer boats went up to about 78 feet.
Mm.
Yeah. So they were quite large.
Where did the families live in when they first came or during this period you're talking about?
Well, my grandfather bought it's kind of a funny story. He had a house out at the beach on North Fletcher. And I can't remember, I have some photographs of a hurricane, and like all hurricanes, it did not hit here directly, but it did a lot of damage like Dora did in 64. But it picked his house up and it moved it and actually dumped it almost on the beach. So my grandfather just got all the workers together from the boatyard, and they started jacking the house up and put pilings down, and that's where they put the house. So to this day, all of the houses are sitting square except for his. It's a little bit at an angle. Well, he had two attorneys in Jacksonville by the name of Claude and Frank Lee Angle. They were two brothers. And one day they called him and told him that he had to move the house. And he said, why? He said, well, you're on a government lot. Now, you got to remember, this is wartime. Mm-hmm. And the government owned a lot of those lots because they were watching for submarines off the East Coast. So it went to court. And my grandfather said, I'm not moving my house. Buy the lot. Well, the lot wasn't for sale. So when he got... when he got into court and they were talking, the judge asked him about moving the house, and he said no, he wasn't going to move it because he didn't move it where it was. God put it there. So you were really, he told the judge, you're talking to the wrong person. You need to talk to God. Apparently this is where he wanted the house. Well, anyway, this battle went on for about a year, and they finally got it worked out, and he bought the lot. They sold him the lot ultimately where the house is sitting today. Then we lived at 408 South Fifth Street, just a couple of blocks from here. And that's where I was raised. And then Johnny, my uncle, he and his family lived on North 14th Street. And in fact, my aunt, Nellie, she still lives in the same house to this day. And then Nick and his family lived on Atlantic Avenue. And his wife, his widow, she still lives in the same house, too, to this day.
And your Aunt Nellie, uh-huh. Did she marry?
No.
Okay, what is her name then?
Nellie Kiliakis.
Oh, she is Nellie Kiliakis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. She was Johnny's wife.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, of the Kiliakises that you've mentioned so far, were they all the boys in the boat building business, or did they branch out other places?
Johnny worked side by side with my grandfather, and he continued building boats. Nick was more into the management of the shrimp boats that they owned. And they had a house in Key West, and they tied up at Stock Island in Key West, Tampa, wherever, you know, the boats would go fishing. I worked with my dad side by side until 64. I went to the military, went to the Army. And when I got home in 67, I went right back to the boatyard and worked with him. And then I worked with him until he passed away.
Okay. You had mentioned that there were other Greeks here, you think, when your mm-hmm. Grandfather came. Did Fernandina have a substantial Greek community?
No, it wasn't substantial, as I've been told, but there were a couple of Greek families here. I don't recall their names. Now, Pete Kiliakis was a cousin to my grandfather, and he was a shoemaker. He built orthopedic shoes. And he had quite a few of his clients were You remember Professor Backwards that used to come on the Ed Sullivan Show? He used to come to Fernandina to get his shoes made because he had terrible, terrible feet. Ricky Ricardo's manager. Let's see. The character that played Zorro way back in the early 50s, he came here and got shoes made. And then he also built custom shoes for people who were not, I mean, like Rockefeller, one of the Rockefellers. I don't know if it was John D. Rockefeller or which one, but they, of course, they had summer homes over on Cumberland Island. And he built a pair of alligator shoes for him. I still have them. He built a pair of alligator shoes for him, and the alligator came out of the pond over at... I can't think of the name of the mansion now. There was a pond at Grayfield. So they took the hide from the gator, and after getting it tanned up, you know, Uncle Pete built shoes for him. And Pete's shoe shop was exactly where Espana restaurant is today, next to the health department on 4th Street.
4th Street.
That was his shoe shop.
Okay. So that was the extent of the Greeks in Fernandina?
Pete's daughter, Lula, married Murphy Cavicles. He was Greek, and his family was from Tarpon Springs. So here we had another Greek family. And then we had the other Mike Tiliakis, the cousin to my grandfather, Mike Tiliakis, same name, but they were first cousins. He lived here, he and his wife. They lived up on Beach Street. And so there was quite a few. Baptisms were always a big thing. You know, they would rent the Keystone Hotel, and you know, for Greek baptisms that ran for days. It was just, you know, they never did anything in a small way. They always did everything in a big way, with a lot of food and a lot of wine.
Now that's always good. You were born in Fernandina. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about where you went to grade school?
Oh, I went to the Catholic convent. My mother graduated from there, and my two uncles, her two brothers, graduated from there. Now, the Greek Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church had separated back in the 1600s, I believe it was, or maybe 1700s. Although the only Greek church we had was over in Jacksonville. But back then, going to Jacksonville was quite a trip. I mean, you just didn't jump in the car and shoot over to Jacksonville like you do today. You planned for this. It was quite an excursion to go to Jacksonville. So my grandfather put in that children would go to the Catholic Church or Catholic school. So when I came along, I was the first grandchild. Of course, I went to the Catholic school. So up until the sixth grade, that's as far as they went, I went to the Catholic school. And then, starting in the sixth grade, I went over to the middle school, I guess you would call it now, on Atlantic. And sixth and seventh and eighth grade was there, and then ninth grade at the high school.
Do you have any particular memories of teachers or friends that you'd like to share with us?
Oh, yeah. There were two sisters, Sister Michael Joseph. She was the Mother Superior. And then there was Sister Philip Marie. And both of these dear ladies are now gone. But I've always said that what little education I have, I got in the Catholic school. But, you know, it was so much different than the public school, because they taught you about life, and they taught you about morality, and they taught you about responsibility, and they taught you about what you should and should not be doing and should be doing. And I mean, we had chores. I still stay in touch with Johnny Giannino, and his father and grandfather were part of the shrimping industry's founding fathers. And Johnny and I still, in fact, I talked with him last week. We still call each other. He's down in Tampa. And we went to the Catholic school together. And we often, when he comes up for a shrimp festival or whatever, we'll always make a trip and just walk around the old school, you know, and just sit out there in the Bologna Park and, you know, just talk about old times. But it was different. When I went to the public school, my first teacher was Mrs. Flatman, and a wonderful lady. Loved her to death. And you got the ABCs, but as far as responsibility and things like that, you know, that you were taught at the Catholic school, you just didn't seem to get the same tweaking that you got there, you know, in the public school.
What was a typical day as a first through seventh grade or eighth grade as a elementary or middle school student, and what did you do after school?
Oh, that's easy. Well, in the mornings up until the sixth grade, I served as altar boy, and of course we had mass. And so I had to be at school around 7:15 to get ready to serve morning mass. During the day, you your scholastic work, things that you had to do, whatever the sisters told you to do. I remember there were still some wood-burning stoves upstairs at the convent. We sometimes, the boys would have to tote wood upstairs, you know, for the nuns. Now, after school, really, you went to the boatyard. There was no question about it. You knew where you were going to go. And when you got to the boatyard, you had work clothes in the tool room, so you went in the tool room and took off your school clothes and put on your work clothes and you went to work. And that's what we did. That's the way they... the old Greeks and Italians, I mean, it was all a family-run business. I mean, if there was nothing going on at my dad's boatyard, then I went down to my granddad's boatyard. But there was always something to do.
Yeah. Well, what about the weekends then? Was there any fun to be had on the weekends or somewhere different you got to go? Or?
Well, I mean, back then no one had cars, you know. I mean, we just had our bicycles. I was one of the lucky ones. I bought an old Cushman motor scooter, like a 1943 Cushman motor scooter, and I kept tinkering with it and messing with it till I got it running, and I'd ride that thing up and down the streets. So when I wasn't at the boatyard, I was enjoying the Cushman motor scooter.
So this was still in at Grace Middle School level?
Mm-hmm. Ah. Yeah.
So did you earn money when you worked at your father or grandfather?
It depends. If you were doing things for the family business, like sweeping the floors, cutting up wood, taking, you know, moving things, if they told you to do something, there was no money to be earned. If they had a boat in for repair, or if they were building a new boat, and they were maybe running a little bit behind and they needed somebody to paint, like down in the hole or something, they would work it out with the owner and say, okay, you know, would you pay him 75 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour, which was a lot of money back then. And so, you know, there was some money. Now, I also had, in about the eighth grade, I had a part-time job. I had two part-time jobs at night. One was at Winn-Dixie, and that's where Fred's is today. And we would put up stock at nighttime. So two or three nights a week, I was still in school, they would lock you in the store. I mean, literally lock you in. You couldn't get out. And we put up stock all night long. And there were four or five of us that did that. Then I had another job at the Amoco station. And that's where the sports bar is today on South 8th Street. Mm-hmm. And worked for a gentleman named Ray Duncan. And I pumped gas and changed oil in cars. And so that's how I made my money. You know, I mean, still had to work in the family business, but that's all you did was work and learn. So you had to work other jobs to make other money.
Well, tell us a little bit about high school and what your interests were once you got to the high school level, and whether you have any stories or activities or teachers you want to mention.
Mr. Bean, Aaron Bean's father, Red Bean, he was a shop teacher. He taught shop. And when I was in high school, well, 7th and 8th grade, I took shop. But when I went over to the high school in the 9th grade, I left and went back. I would leave, I forget what period it was, and go back to the junior high. And I was like a supervisor in the shop because I knew how to run all the tools and things from the boatyard. So he was comfortable with me showing the other students how to do this stuff. And then we would build different projects. You know, one of the projects we did was a small 8-foot boat that we built out of one sheet of plywood. And my grandson today, he and I built one a few years ago. We still have it. And there was a Boy Scout troop that came down to the boatyard one day, and they wanted to build these little boats. But they didn't know, you know, what to do. So Dad devised this plan where you take this one sheet of plywood and you cut 9 inches off each side. That would be the sides, and then the bottom you would cut out and then put the boat together. You know, it doesn't take long to build something like that. It takes more time to paint it than it does to build it. But anyway, we built about 30 of those boats for those kids. And so, you know, it was fun. It was, and then there wasn't a whole lot to do. We didn't have the fast food joints that we have today. We had the old Island Theater. I don't know if you remember that or not. It sat on the corner of 11th and Atlantic. And it was a Quonset hut. And it was the Island Theater. And they would show one movie for God only knows how long. And, you know, you would go to the movie and you would watch that. And I remember a friend of mine, Walter Austin, he had a Cushman motor scooter. And there was a store downtown on Center Street, and it was called Bottom Dollar. And every Saturday, we would shoot down there and wash their windows. And we got like 50 cents each. And that 50 cents took us to the movie that afternoon or that evening, and also Sunday. So, and that was also a drink and some candy. And then, right here at the end of Third Beach, there was a lady by the name of Mrs. Sanders, and she owned a little grocery store. And I would go by there and sweep her floor and do whatever she needed done. And the payment was she made oatmeal and raisin cookies, and she made peanut butter cookies, and she made sugar cookies, and she had these great big huge wide mouth jars that set up. She sold them for like a penny or 2 pennies a piece, but I got like one of each, and so I'd load my pockets with that, and you know, and I had cookies, so I'd jump on my bike or my scooter and take off. But I knew there was the White Knight Crab Company. And all the ladies, the crabbers, it was quite a process. The crabbers would go out and catch the crab, and then they would bring them to the White Knight Crab Company. And they steamed them. And the ladies were picking the meat, you know, the claw meat and the back meat. And they would put them in a can, pasteurize it, and, you know, put it in the cooler and ship them all over the United States. Well, I knew all the ladies that worked there, and I would go in, and I could always get a big, thick crab sandwich there, you know. And then, in my younger days, before that, there was a guy named John Clara. And John, he owned an enterprise next door, just south of my grandfather's boatyard. Had a long dock, and they would drive trucks out on the dock. And he had a turnaround place where the trucks would turn around. Well, what he was doing, he was catching, his boats would go catch shrimp or other boats, and he would buy from the boats. They would process the shrimp, they would steam the shrimp, and he put them in jars, pasteurize them, cool them, put them on these trucks and ship them up north. Well, I knew all the ladies that worked in there. And, of course, I could go in there and come out with a, you know, double handful of shrimp, too. So eating was no problem. You know, we always knew where to go to get something to eat. But there was a place called Jake's Grill on 8th Street. It's still there to this day. This is where Fernandina Deli is today. But Jake's Grill was in the front on 8th Street. They lived in the back. Jewel Jacobs and her husband owned it. And if you wanted French fries, you know, that was the place to go to get some greasy French fries or a cheeseburger. Then there was a place on 8th Street across from H&H, where H&H is today, Auto Center. And it was called the Frisette. I actually met my wife there in 1965. And you could go there and get your milkshakes and your, you know, French fries and things like that. But we had nothing. We had nothing in the way of fast foods like you see today. Sure. I mean, it was, you just didn't have anything like that.
Nick, we're interested in knowing what you did after high school.
Well, my dad was suffering from cardiac problems. And in 1962, he had a massive heart attack. And, of course, back then no one had insurance or anything like that. And so the latter part of 62... I dropped out of school and went to work full time because I was the oldest. And then in 64, Dad got better and he went to Belize, Central America, to build two yachts, or to supervise the building of two yachts. And so in 64, I joined the Army. And I ended up in Europe. So I was in Europe for 2.5 years. And then when I got out and came back home in 67, my wife and I, we were dating while I was in the military. And so we got married in 67. But I went back to the boatyard working with my dad. And I was with him when he had his heart attack and passed away. And I really didn't know what to do for him. And that was a sort of a terrifying feeling, you know, especially your father, but to be with anybody who's gone down and you just don't know what to do to render help or aid or anything. So my Uncle Johnny, I called him. He came to the house. Now, he was city commissioner at the time, but he also was a member of the Fernandina Beach Volunteer Fire Department. Now, they had volunteers that augmented the paid department. There was only like 4 people on the paid department. And I was really impressed when they got there, I mean, because it just seemed like they knew what they were doing, although, you know, my father expired. But so we got to talking, and after, you know, the funeral and all, he said, well, why don't you come down and join the volunteers just to get some training? So I did. And one thing led to another, and the chief, he liked me, and in 1971, I went with the fire department full time, and a little over 25 years later, I retired. And my son today works with the fire department. He's a paramedic with Fire Rescue, and my grandson works for the Jacksonville Fire Department. He's a paramedic with Jacksonville.
Well, let me go back just a minute. You said you met your wife at the Frisette.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other places for young people who were dating to go to, or it was pretty much the same movie?
It was either that or the movie theater or, of course, the skating rink out at the beach. You could go there. And Then next door to the skating rink, we had the Blue Seas, and Mr. Bowers owned that. And great cheeseburgers. The grease would drip off your elbows. And, apparently it was healthy grease. All those who ate a lot of them, including me, were still around. So, but that was about it for young people. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot to do here. You know, you would circle the docks downtown and then circle the main beach and then come back and circle the docks and then go back and circle the beach. And then you'd go to the Freezette and put a quarter in the jukebox and, you know, listen to six or eight songs, and then you'd go back circling again. But of course, back then, gas was only 10 or 11 or 12 cents a gallon. So, you know, everybody could pitch in a quarter and you could drive all night.
Well, let me ask a little bit about raising a family in Fernandina. Tell us about your family and any challenges to raising a family in a small community, if there are any.
I think there are less challenges raising in a small community than there are, you know, raising in a large community. And the reason for it is, you know, in a small community, you can keep so much under your thumb. In a large community, you don't know where to put your thumb to, you know, to be on top of anything. Dale and I got married in July of 67, the 20th of July, which happens to be her birthday. So we got married July the 20th, and we're going on 44 years now. And Jamie, my son, came along in 70, and then Christy, my daughter, came along in 72. Great place to raise kids. Great place. You didn't really have to worry about them. Now, we lived at 409 South 6th Street, and it was a house that was built by my grandfather. And that backyard abutted the backyard to 408 South 5th Street. So that was the house that we ended up buying for like $6,000. And so that's where we brought Jamie home from the hospital. And, you know, I was working at the boatyard, and this was before the fire department, and because in 71 I went with the fire department. We ended up buying a house on Stanley Drive, and we lived there for a little over 35 years. And in 06, Dale always, I was in politics for 16 consecutive years. She always said, when you get out of politics, we're building a house. Well, I got out of politics after 16 years, and we owned a lot in Oyster Bay, and so we built a house. And it was really neat. It is neat because it's right across the street from my son, Jamie. So, you know, I can go visit in my bathrobe and slippers and, you know, things like that. But it's, you know, it was a great place to raise kids. It's a great place to raise a family. Even though they complain, even though, you know, there's nothing to do here, you know, and I always say, well, you should have been here when I was growing up. You think there's nothing to do today, you know. So, anyway, great place. You know, you couldn't find a better place to raise kids. And it's funny because the older they get, the smarter you get. And they realize that now, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your work life. We know that you worked with your father and your grandfather in the boat building business. What happened to the boat building business after your father died?
I kept it open for about another 3 years, and we built several more boats. And I was really getting involved real deeply with fire rescue, and the shrimping industry was taking a turn. And not a turn for the better, a turn for the worse. And so I closed the new building portion of the boatyard down. They still did repair work, but I wasn't involved in building any more boats. And I devoted most of my time, or 90% of my time, strictly to fire rescue, and just made a career out of that. And then I've always had this I don't know. It's not a. I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse, but I love business. I love putting things together and watching it work and watching it happen. The entrepreneurial spirit. Mr. Moore out at Moore's Grocery at the beach used to, you could call him up and you could order either a pork roast or a beef roast. And he would cut the roast and he would put vegetables in it and tie it up. And then he would stab it and he would put like garlic and all kind of herbs in it. Then he put it in a bag with a marinade and he would marinate it for a couple of days in the cooler, and then you would go pick it up and bring it home and cook it. Well, Dale called me one day and she says, can you run by Moore's and pick up the roast? And I said, well, sure. So I go to Moore's, and Moore's sat right on the beach, right at the beach, and there was sand on the floor and there were people in there. Back in the meat market, he had a great meat market, but he also sold bait shrimp and things like that. Well, there were people lined up, you know, wet bathing suits and stuff. And so I was standing in line when this gentleman in the other line looked at me and said, you from here? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, maybe you can help. He said, I'm renting the Yellow House. Well, everyone knew Mr. Moore owned the Yellow House, and it sat on the ocean right behind where Sandy Bottoms is today, just to the south of it. He says, we're from Alma, Georgia, and we're looking to rent a television. Now, don't ask me what possessed me to do what I did next, but I said, you're the luckiest man on the island. You happen to be talking to the only man that rents televisions. He said, you got to be kidding. I said, nope. I said, it's black and white. He said, that's fine. I said, I'll be there in 20 minutes. I peeled out of line, got in the truck, and went home. Dale says, where's the roast? And I thought, oh no, I forgot the roast. So I go back in the spare room, and we had a 19-inch Sylvania black and white television. And I'm taking it all apart, you know, undoing the rabbit ears and all this. She said, what are you doing? I said, I'll tell you later. So I loaded it up, and I took it to the Yellow House. I knocked on the door, and he said, put it right over there. So I put the TV over there and I plugged it up and I was took my screwdriver and I was putting the rabbit ears on when he hit me with a question. He says, how much do I owe you? God, I hadn't thought about that. I figured, well, $2 a day, 7 days in a week. I said, $14 paid in advance. He said, that's no problem. You take a check. I said, sure. Who do I make it out to? I thought, oh God, here we go. I'm thinking. Jamie and Christy. I said, J&K TV Rentals. So he made the check out in J&K TV Rentals. Well, that was the beginning of a little mini career in the TV business. And before it was over, within 2 years, I had three or four trucks on the road. And we were selling color televisions. I was getting them through a contract of a guy named Bernie. His last name was Higgins. Can't think of his first name now, but he was at 20th and Main in Jacksonville. And he had a contract with Holiday Inn and a couple of other motels, and they were motel television. And I was buying them from him, and then I would sell them on time or sell them outright. And then I hired a TV repairman, and we were doing repair work. And by the way, I rented the building where Jake's Grill used to be, where the deli is today. So that's where J&K TV Rentals was. And then within 3 years, I sold it for $70-something thousand, the company. But it all started over a roast.
Well, then what did you do next?
Well, I had this. In 1986, I knew that there was a group of men trying to get the port developed down here at the waterfront. And that really was something I was very passionate about, because I knew that our community was founded because of our deep water natural harbor. And I felt like that was something that needed to be done. Well, doing a little bit of, you know, talking with several people, found out that, you know, the Port Authority So I ran for the Port Authority and won every precinct. And we got the port developed. And then we went to work on the tradeplex. And we got the tradeplex, 65 acres done out where Georgia Pacific is today. And then I had the opportunity of, I was with the Port Authority for 2 terms, 8 years, and I had the opportunity to do a lot of the negotiations with Cushman Wakefield out of Atlanta, who was the front runner or forerunner for Georgia Pacific. And we beat out about 6 southern states, and we got them here. And that was a big accomplishment. You know, I like that. And then I was seeing how things were going in the county, and just, I don't know, a bunch of guys got together, businessmen got together one day. And anyway, I ran for county commission, and I won 2 terms there. So 16 years was enough. In the meantime, in 1979, I went to real estate school and just devoured every page of the book. And I just thought that was the greatest thing I'd ever done in my life. So I went home and I told my wife, I said, "You've got to take this." I said, "This is wonderful." So she did. And we've been in real estate since 1980. And still in real estate. So in 1993, I decided that we would open a small company, and it would be just my wife and I and my daughter. And we would just run a small real estate brokerage company. Well, that small company grew into 3 offices and 26 agents and a mortgage company. And I had offices in Orange Park, Clay County, and here in Fernandina. And county commissioner at the same time. And we opened up, we had the boat works out of Uly that we opened. We've closed it since then. So I've always managed to stay super busy. It drives me crazy when I have nothing to do.
Well, you and I spoke a couple of weeks ago, and you have another interest, I think, in music that you haven't told us about yet. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah. When I went to Germany, I met a friend of mine who has turned out to be a lifelong friend. And we formed a little band, and we were playing music. And I ended up as like an aide to the colonel, to the squadron commander. And Howard and I ended up playing music, and we still, the phone call I got when I put that on silent was from Howard in Texas. And we still, to this day, we talk 5-6 times a week, and we still write music. So we've got quite a bit of music that we've written. Howard's 60, he's 1 year older than I am, he's 64, I'm 63. And he wants to do a record label this year. So we're talking about doing that. And we've partnered with a gentleman here in Nassau County who's a young guy that's a good writer. And so the three of us are putting out some good music right now. Music is something that I like to do. I've taught myself how to play the keyboard this past year. I've always played the guitar, it seems like, but I've taught myself how to play the keyboard. And in fact, I'm playing the keyboard more than I'm playing the guitar. But I don't really play in public anymore. After doing that for many years, you know, let me go upstairs to my music. I have a music room at the new house. Just let me go up there and, you know, I'll do some writing. But what we do, we get with Howard in Texas, and we being here, we do it through Skype. So we bring him right in. You know, there he is, here we are, and he's in Texas, and we're in Florida, and we're writing music together. So technology is a wonderful thing, you know. So I don't have to fly out to Texas, and you don't have to fly to Florida. We just do it through Skype.
Well, with everything you've done over the years, I'm very anxious to stay in touch with you and find out what else is going to come up in a year or two or in the future. You're always looking for something, doing something.
Well, we're putting a new business together as we speak. I'll let you know what that is in a couple of months. But I just got back from Gainesville yesterday. Last week I was in Tallahassee, my son and I. And but it's fun, you know. It's I love putting businesses together. I love putting that kind of stuff together and watching it work. And so it's sort of challenging. The boredom comes with after it's put together and after it's working and it's on cruise control. Well, what else is there to do? If there's no expansion, then look for something else, you know. But I think in this economy, and this is a terrible, terrible economy that we're in. I mean, I hope anyone who's listening to this 5 years from today can say, oh, I remember somebody told me about a bad economy back in 2010 and 2011. But I think we've got a long way to go to climb out of this. But I think, you know, people need to be diversified. You just can't depend upon one source of income. You just can't. I mean, because I think you will go down, mm-hmm. you know, you'll go down by the bow. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened to so many people.
Well, I have a few more questions mm-hmm. that sort of look back.
Okay.
What would you say would be the most significant changes in Fernandina that you've witnessed in your lifetime?
The thickness of bureaucracy. The almost impossibility to get anything done. You know, to me, I think you should always capitalize on what God and nature has given you. If you think about Tarpon Springs, what do you immediately think of? You think about sponge diving, you think about the sponge boats, and even going out on the boat and watching the diver go down and bring back a sponge. Well, he took it down with him, but that's okay. This is how it was done. You know, I see merchants, you know, they're constantly, you know, what can we do to create more business? What can we do to bring more business? You know, blah, 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 blah. Restaurants, especially today, are crying because, let's face it, I mean, everything is tightened up. But to me, you know, they should be capitalizing. This is the birthplace of the modern shrimping industry. They should be capitalizing on that. There should be people downtown every night pushing, I don't know, a hot dog cart or whatever you want to call it, with free Fernandina boil shrimp. Free. Here's a little package here. Please take it. And by the way, here's a $5 coupon, and that's to the Marina restaurant. You have to use it either tonight or tomorrow night. That's all that's on. Now you're creating business. Now you're bringing business in. The next coupon could be for the crab trap or what have you. There should be people telling stories downtown. There should be musicians on every corner just playing music. I mean, create an atmosphere that will bring people down there. But you've got so many people that, you know, honestly, I think they would rather wake up with a problem than go to bed with a solution. You know, it's like, what do you want? You know, I don't understand what it is that you want. You've got it. You're not capitalizing on it. And then, of course, you know, you can't seem to get anything done. You know, everything is permitted to death. And that's just I call it the thickness of bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned some of the businesses that you enjoyed as a school-aged young man. Are there any other business? A lot of businesses have come and gone in your lifetime. Is there anything else, other business or spot that you'd like to mention that you miss?
I miss doing business on a handshake. I remember the boats that we built. I don't ever remember contracts being signed. I don't ever remember paper being passed between the boat owner and the builder. You know, it was just strictly a handshake. I remember going to Standard Hardware, and that's where we got all of our stuff, you know, hardware for the boats and things, and just, you know, you just got what you needed. At the end of the month, you paid the bill. You know, it's not like it is today. I mean, today, the problem as I see it, you know, there's so many people want government to legislate a perfect world. You can't legislate a perfect world. It isn't a perfect world. I think what you have to do, you have to learn to live in an imperfect world. And if you can meet that challenge to live in an imperfect world, then you can understand the feelings of everybody else around you. But it's tough. You know, it's real tough when you know, the little stores, the mom and pop stores, Piggly Wiggly that used to be on the corner of 2nd and Atlantic, Labor's meat market, John Labor's had a meat market there. Jean's store. You remember Jean's store downtown, the biggest, littlest store in the world?
Yes.
You know, used to love to go into Jean's store. And, you know, just if nothing else, just to get a Coca-Cola. But he literally had anything he wanted in there. And I'm surprised they even cleaned that place out. I mean, there was so much stuff in there. But just, you know, things like Mr. Moore, you know, doing the roast and things like that. I don't know. You just don't. I mean, I can imagine somebody trying to do that today in the health department. You know, when they get there, it's like, here we go again, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It was a community. It was small. I don't think there was 3,000 people on the whole island at the time. But that's what I miss. Yep.
Okay. Nick, for my last question here, I wondered if there are any other stories about Fernandina or its people that you would like to share with us today.
I think one of the major things that comes to my mind is how we have cleaned up pollution here. I remember as a kid, if you put your boat in the water and went in front of Ran here, the water was blood red, and there was steam coming off of the water. Well, it was acid that they were dumping in the river, and we constantly had fish kills and shrimp kills, you know, all the time. Container did the same thing, except their outfall was colored brown, not red. And then they dumped, they had an outfall that went to the ocean. And they dumped, you know, acid waste there. You know, if you had a wreck, you would call, you know, Oxley, Margaret Oxley, and Barney Hall, who lived up here at 7th and Beach, would get in a station wagon and go to the wreck to pick you up. And then they brought you to a hospital that had no doctor on duty. So, you know, we've come so far. Today, you know, this for all basic purposes, some of the best fishing around here is right out here in front of these mills. I mean, that's how clean it is. And you actually can eat what you catch. We've got, you know, a public safety, fire, rescue, city and county that's just absolutely second to none. We've come a long way. And I'm not saying there isn't more to do, but we've come a long way. I look at the port, and I'm so proud of that, you know, when I see ships coming and going. Because that's what it's all about, is commerce. And we should be looking at what can we do to keep our children at home and employ these kids once they get out of school. And no child should have to leave home to go to school, to go to work, unless they just choose to. But we've come a long way.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure talking with you today. I want to thank you for sharing your recollections with me on behalf of the Amelia Island Museum of History. And this concludes the interview with Nick Demetrios Dionis.
Thank you.